Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And today's episode was fun because I had on Adam Lauritsen, who some of you heard when I did the Clippers episode, longtime season ticket holder, writes the Fast Break blog for the San Jose Mercury News. And we wanted to do a podcast talking about the season, what we expect, potential challengers, and we go in a lot of fun directions with it about thinking about this Warriors team, what they could be, what they are now, and how it fits in with the rest of the league, teams like the Spurs and the Cavs and the Celtics changing around a lot. So we go in different directions. And also, this podcast is the first one sponsored by the inaugural sponsor of the Locked On Warriors podcast, and that's Athletes Collective, a clothing brand that I'm really happy to use myself. And so you can go to athletescollective.com and use the promo code Warriors for 15% off your first order. So you should definitely check that out. The conversation with Mr. Lauritsen runs about 35 minutes. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We're still in preseason mode. The two of us last talked after the Warriors' dominant performance against the Clippers. They haven't looked that dominant afterwards. They've looked really good. But I think that leads into the idea of what your expectations are for this year. And it's hard with this team. Something that I've been dealing with is a lot of people want to put like a win total on the regular season. But for me, this regular season is more about watching them play and figuring out what's going to happen in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just jumping back to something you said, you talked about us still being in the preseason. Preseason has felt long before, and there's been discussion of, are there too many preseason games? Should training camp be shorter? It really feels too long this year, particularly with all the hype surrounding this team, and everybody's excited to see what they look like in the regular season when they're not running a 15-man rotation like they are right now. So we are still in preseason. We're still going to be there for another week or so. But you know, the regular season is on the horizon. But to answer your question, sort of how to frame what the goals are for the season, my expectation is Kerr is really going to sort of throttle the team in a sense. And he'll do that in a couple ways. There's been a lot of talk about having a rotation to keep guys fresh. I think that they'll do that, playing you know, two of the stars instead of three or four, giving them as many breaks as they can on back-to-backs, things like that. But I also think that the experimentation in playing the younger guys is going to be a way for Kerr to really keep everybody engaged and also have his goal of keeping minutes down and reducing the wear and tear on everyone. And it has the added benefit if you can find someone like McCaw, if you can find a reclamation project like McGee, you can really get an addition to your rotation. And when the playoffs roll around, you'll have a deeper, more well-rounded team thanks to the way they approach the season. So I think that that's really going to be their focus, keeping everybody healthy, keeping everybody fresh, and trying to make the team as diverse and deep as possible going into March, April, and the postseason.
That is definitely a healthy way to think about it. And the other part that will help this team in terms of keeping things fresh, it doesn't really help in terms of fatigue, is just the novelty. You know, not only with the four guys playing together, which we'll see a lot of with various fifth players over the course of the season, but just the idea of adding in guys like David West and Zaza Pachulia, you know, that is a level of figuring out and excitement that hasn't really been a part of the Warriors. You know, they have added players over the years, but usually it's been more on the smaller roles and all of that. And Kerr, if he wants to, can use changing up rotations, changing up who gets staggered when to keep these guys engaged. But at the same time, it will be more noticeable and more important to try out their best five-man lineup, whatever. I mean, I think we both feel that it's going to be with Iguodala as the fifth guy, but to give that some time because it is something different, and replicating it in practice is not the same as doing it against a NBA team that is trying to beat you.
Yeah, well, we're going to see some sort of games that are circled on the schedule this year where I think Kerr says, tonight I'm going all out. We're going to see what we can do. They're going to be the tougher opponents that should hopefully provide a measure of where the team is. So So those games are going to be special this year because I don't think we're going to see that type of commitment to the lineups that may be playing in the playoffs night in, night out during the regular season. But to get to your previous point, you know, I think that it is right that when you're dealing with a team like this, there's so many different sort of toys you can play with, for lack of a better expression. You know, someone like Curry, having a teammate like West, like Durant, like Zaza, someone who can do things that previous teammates were unable to do, he's going to love that. And they're going to love exploring what they can do with that optionality in their lineup. Same thing for Kerr from a coaching perspective. So I'm not worried at all about them losing focus over the course of the regular season. If anything, I'm worried about them being too dialed in and still sort of gunning for those wins and pushing it in times where maybe they should ease off a little bit. I think it's going to be hard for them to suppress that instinct that they had all last year and before.
Yeah, one way to phrase that is that Kerr's going to have to be saying no a lot more than in prior years, because there were times when he probably wanted Curry or Green or whoever to play less, and they were agitating because they wanted to be out there. And one of the hardest things to do in sports, and the NFL is another good example of this, is to tell a healthy player he can't play. And so at certain moments that'll be easy, but at other moments it's going to be really hard.
And it's such a flip from the Warriors teams that you and I saw a decade ago or even 6 or 7 years ago. You used to worry about these teams having enough focus and bringing it every single night. And now you're talking about the opposite problem, where you're trying to get them to tone it down and ease up a little bit so they don't consume all that competitive energy and fire. It's a good problem to have, and it's a bunch of veterans and a well-versed coaching staff, so they'll be able to handle it, and I'm not really concerned about that. I think that's a storyline that'll fall by the wayside as we go on through the season.
That could be something that David West can speak to a little bit and his experience with the Spurs, because Kerr has that as well, but Kerr didn't play for the more modern Spurs, which have been so vigilant and you could even say militant about the idea of making sure their players were well rested and focusing on the playoffs, because they had more urgency with that when Duncan and Parker and Manu got older. And the Warriors aren't old. They're not in the same circumstances the Spurs were. They would be doing it more for just to kind of keep everybody fresh. But having somebody who's a respected voice in the locker room who can vouch for it could be a valuable asset to making sure that the grousing is at a minimum, as long as it's handled well.
Yeah, I think West is going to end up being another important person in the locker room for the reasons you said. Bogut's departure, he was a veteran voice in the locker room. Some people listen to him more than others. But West is a guy who's been around, who sees the big picture. He's going to be a forceful voice. And he's someone like Iguodala who has sort of made a sacrifice to some extent of his game. You know, he could probably have a larger role somewhere else, but has opted to come to the Warriors because he wants to compete for a championship and he wants to play this beautiful style of basketball. So I think he's going to have some authority, and we'll probably see him exerted as the season goes on, trying to keep everybody in the right state of mind and the right focus going through the grind of January, February, March, those months where things get tough.
The truth on a team like this, and it's very different than somebody like the Lakers who are so young, is that those voices in the locker room are more for specific moments than a general presence. So there'll be a time that some player is saying something and David West can go over to them and say, just deal with it or something like that. And at those moments when things are bad, sometimes you need a light voice. You need that levity. Barbosa certainly provided that at moments. And at other points, you need the right person to say no. And it will be the coach at moments. Like, there are always times that you need that authority figure. But at other points, it can be better when it's somebody who's on the court with you, who's in the trenches with you, who you respect, to say the same thing, but with a different voice and a different kind of authority.
Yeah, I'm really interested to watch the evolution of leadership on the Warriors this season, because I think the way you describe it is exactly right. You need a diversity of leadership, diversity of leaders. Draymond obviously has portrayed himself as being the forceful leader, the loud leader of this team, and I think he absolutely is, but that leader isn't always the best person to get across to some people, and he's not always the right person to speak in every situation. So it'll be interesting to see how the Warriors navigate it and how Draymond navigates it. I think there's going to be a lot more focus on him. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him given everything that happened last year. And maybe sort of the voice of leadership that he got away with previously, being loud, boisterous, in your face, We may see that evolve a bit this season. I think he's going to try to figure out different ways to reach people and approach people.
And something, I was going back a couple of points ago, but that I wanted to bring up, Nate and I have talked on Dunked On about the idea that last year the death lineup was a show of respect. That it was a, you know, that when they pulled it out, it was like either, A, you played us really well, or we think a lot of that. And this team will do the same thing in all likelihood, where there will be certain games where they go to it early, not necessarily because of the outcome, but just because they want to. And who they determine to be those teams will also be important for us to understand, because while it doesn't necessarily definitively say, oh, just because the Warriors think this team is a threat, that means they are. But knowing their thought process will be useful for us.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how they view the rest of the league this year, because there's the feeling, at least I get, that there's a changing of the guard right now in the NBA. You have a lot of traditional powers that are really on the decline. You have some upstart teams that probably haven't really emerged on the scene yet, but are really talented. So the coaching staff will be dialed in on who those threats are, and we'll get an early glimpse on how they play these different teams, like you said, for how they're approaching the season, their opponents, and the real threats to them winning a championship.
And the transition point is well taken, because the Spurs are the most notable with this, losing Tim Duncan. Replacing him with Gasol makes them a different team. It doesn't make them a better team, but they weren't going to do that with Duncan gone anyway. And Cleveland will be a question mark. They dealt with a lot early last year with Kyrie being out and just general uncertainty. I think Tristan Thompson only started like less than half of their regular season games, so they will be dealing with that, and they're naturally a good team that will be dealing with some of the same regular season complacency that the Warriors are. But they're, the other rest of the league is these teams that are, might be on the precipice of falling off, like the Clippers. They might be. We don't know if they're going to stay up where they were or fall down. And then these young teams like the Jazz and the Wolves, who should be on the rise but might not be there yet.
Yeah, I think that this is a year where it really is the Warriors' championship to lose for exactly the reasons you said. Cleveland's the obvious competitor, but it's not clear that Cleveland has sorted out all the issues. How do you use Love? Is J.R. Smith reliable? Where does Thompson fit into the picture? Do they have the depth to compete on any given night, particularly having lost a couple pieces this offseason? Is LeBron physically up to taking all the punishment for another year? Those are a lot of questions that line up for Cleveland. And then you look at essentially every other team in the league. They're teams that are intriguing, that look like they're putting the pieces together to be challengers for the Warriors, but they're all missing at least one big piece. So we're going to see how that shakes out. Maybe there are trades that happen during the season to consolidate power to create another threat, or maybe this is just a year where the Warriors are the presumptive favorites and just have to play up to those expectations and make what everyone thinks is the logical outcome the actual outcome at the end of the season.
Yeah, that is a good way of framing it. And Cleveland's departures are probably underrated. And the other aspect with Cleveland that is extremely important to note is that the guys they added are certainly good basketball players when they're at their best. Former Warrior Mike Dunleavy, though it seems like it's been a lifetime since he was on the team. You know, Dunleavy, Richard Jefferson moving into a role maybe more similar to what he had in the finals than what he did in the regular season. But those guys do not match up well at all against this Warriors team. And it's true in terms of when they defend. That's how some have focused on those kinds of players. But it might be more prevalent on the offensive end, because at this point in their careers, they can't really create a lot for themselves and others. So they'll only be able to maximize the seams that players like LeBron and Kyrie can make for them.
Yeah, we saw it in the finals. You essentially need LeBron and Irving having games of their lives for them to be in a position to win. And I think that's even more the case this year, because like you said, the matchups have only gotten more difficult. So Dunleavy's not going to put them over the edge there. Everybody else is a year older on the team, and they're on the downslope of sort of their productivity, with the exception of probably Thompson. So it's going to be, I think, easier in the East this year, maybe, for Cleveland, maybe equally easy, but I still don't see them putting the pieces together against the Warriors over a 7-game series in the finals.
Want to take a quick moment to tell you about Athletes Collective, the inaugural sponsor of Locked On Warriors, and I'm thrilled to have them because I am personally a big fan of their products. And for those of you who are unaware, Athletes Collective. They're a sportswear company that offers premium athletic gear at an affordable price without the logos. And affordable price is probably understating it a little bit, because it costs 40 to 50% less than the major brands, and they use the same high-quality technical fabrics. I've been wearing their clothing for a few months now, and I've been blown away by the quality. And when you see 40 to 50% less, you think that it's going to be lower, but it really isn't. I wear it to work out all the time. It's also great for anything casual, like around the house. And I've actually started using some of their shirts as undershirts for other things, you know, if you're going out, because it's comfortable, it's absorbent, and it's really great material. So you can do all of that with it at a discounted price, but also it's pre-shrunk. So for those of you who don't like complications in terms of washing, you can wash and dry them as much as you like, and they never lose the original shape. So you don't have to worry about, you know, it changing or anything like that as it gets more wear and tear. It's a great material, very comfortable, breathes well, and I've been really impressed with the product. And when the opportunity came along to tell them to more people, I really jumped on it, because I am such a big believer in the product. And as an added bonus for listeners of the show, you can go to athletescollective.com and use the promo code Warriors at checkout, and you can get 15% off your first order. So you go to athletescollective.com, fill up your cart with whatever you want, and then if you add the promo code Warriors, that's 15% off. So I highly recommend it, really good products, and you can check it out, athletescollective.com. Now back to talking about the Warriors, and in this case, the Cavs. I think this is going to be a lot harder of a year for them in the East. That doesn't mean they're going to really get threatened, because last year they didn't at all. You know, Toronto took two games from them, I believe, but it wasn't really like they were going to take the series. And the reason for that is Boston. And Boston is one of the teams that could end up challenging the Warriors, because they have some of the unusual strengths that teams like the Spurs have used, which is that they have two quality perimeter defenders, and then they have very few bad players, and they can go 7-8 deep. And while not the definitive characteristic of teams like the Spurs that have done well against Golden State over the years, they have enough of that to be a problem, and they're well coached.
Yeah, the thing that scares me about Boston is that they blend the perimeter defense with now an inside scoring threat, which they picked up in the offseason with Horford. The blitz that they put on the Warriors' backcourt was incredibly effective last year, and their perimeter defenders did a good job breaking the Warriors' offensive rhythm. Durant, I think, helps the Warriors deal with that some. We'll find out how much as the season goes on. But I still worry about what happens when the Warriors have to defend in the low post against a team that has a well-coached offense, smart ball movement, a lot of different threats, like you mentioned. I think they're an obvious threat to the Warriors, maybe not over the course of a seven-game series, but if anybody's going to give them a run for their money, I think Boston has as much of a chance as anyone. And Utah in the West, I think, is a similar team that has those pieces that match up well against the Warriors. And while Utah's young, they need sort of a star. They are kind of finding their way with the collection of players they have. There are lots of intriguing pieces there that the Warriors would have some difficulty, I think, handling compared to the average opponent.
Both of those teams are talented and from a physical standpoint, have some real challenging things because they have so many guys who are able defenders. But they have the same basic problem, which is the lack of a truly undeniable player. And so those guys that when they're on, you just have to throw your hands up and say, we'll do the best we can. And those teams have historically done really well against everyone. And that makes sense. You know, MVPs win championships. And it's also a big part of the reason why getting Durant was such a useful thing, because took him away from everybody else. And so Kawhi is a great player. He's one of the best guys in the league. He's not really that way offensively. He can be defensively, naturally. LeBron reached that in the finals. It was a big reason they won. And while he is incredibly flawed, and that leads to him sometimes being overrated, Kyrie Irving unquestionably fits in that, because he has these moments where you just can't really do anything. Game 5 of the finals was a good example of that. The Warriors were not at full strength. Bogut got hurt in that game. Draymond was out due to suspension, and then Curry was not himself. But Kyrie had this long stretch where they just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, the Warriors certainly have enough traumatic memories of him pulling those types of moves. But I think that is the type of player that both Boston and Utah are lacking. Which brings up an interesting hypothetical. If you were going to add a player someone who's potentially on the trade market to either Boston or Utah to make them competitive against the Warriors, who would you see that type of player be? What type of person should they be looking to add if they were going to find the last piece to really vault them to the next level of competition?
There are two guys that came to mind, one of whom is probably not on the market right now, and the other one definitely is. The one that probably isn't is James Harden. And Harden has flummoxed the Warriors for years. They eventually figured it out over the course of a series, but he has struggled being the alpha and the omega offensively. Like that is a role James Harden likes. But if he were playing with the right surrounding talent, we might see that this year. It gets to another level in terms of spacing, in terms of challenging. And then the other guy is DeMarcus Cousins, because he has never gotten close to reaching his ceiling for various reasons. But at his best, and I saw this a little bit, I can't remember if you were at the game at the Shark Tank. I don't think you were. So the game that the Warriors played there, he had these stretches where he just ruins Zaza Pachulia. He just is that kind of an undeniable talent. And it's weird to have somebody who can do that and doesn't as often as they should. But the possibility of him with Brad Stevens, with spacing, with perimeter defense is something that should give other teams nightmares. And if his value starts dropping, Boston, as much as he's not a great fit with Al Horford, if they can make an asset play on it just because they have so much stuff, that's a guy they should go after. More maybe even than somebody like Jimmy Butler, because Butler's really good, but he's not going to push them over the top. He doesn't have the same kind of ceiling that DeMarcus does.
Yeah, I think he's the obvious pick for an addition to Boston that would really make them a championship contender. Like you said, they have the assets to potentially make some sort of play without giving up any piece of their core, which should be scary for the rest of the league. The other interesting thing is, if you blow up the Clippers, you know, would Paul going somewhere else be enough? Would Griffin going somewhere else be enough? And I don't think it probably is, but they're still the types of pieces where they've never really fit together perfectly in the Clippers. And maybe a change of scenery, maybe a different system, a different coach could get a little bit more out of them collectively, sort of adding to a team in a way that could be intriguing. But I'm curious to see what LA does this year. I think that they're probably going to struggle a bit. And whether Doc decides to blow up that team or just rides it down, we'll be curious to see.
If the only change that was made was swapping Isaiah Thomas for Chris Paul, assuming he can keep something close to what he did last year, that Celtics team would be just insane. Because Chris could do whatever he wants in terms of running the offense. He is that kind of single primary ball handler, like the kind of the old school style of a guy like Magic who just really runs the show. And considering Boston doesn't have a lot of secondary creation, that would really work. And so you could, I was just thinking about a lineup when you mentioned it, of CP, Avery Bradley, so then you can bounce them defensively, Jay Crowder, or even going small and using another more three, like another forward type at the four, and then Horford. So you can play a modified five out, you have really good defense. Like, that would be a great lineup, and that would also work really well against the Cavs, because you would have so many guys to throw at Kyrie. Because, you know, Jay Crowder and presumably if Jaylen Brown can turn it on, like, those guys will be on LeBron. But then you have guys like Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, if he's not included. Well, then they would be getting him. If they got CP, they'd probably be as a free agent this summer. And then you could use the other guys to get other assets. But yeah, that's one that's been floating around. The big question there, and you alluded this with the Clippers, is how will they age?
Yeah, we're going to find out this year. I don't think we know, given the health problems that they've had. We haven't really seen them at full strength for an extended period of time for a while. How much does Paul have in the tank? How much of the injuries taken out of Griffin's game? Does Jordan stay focused? Does he get frustrated? How does the bench play? You know, is Austin Rivers the laughingstock of the league the way that he probably should be? We'll find out.
They're a big question mark also because, especially with Chris Paul, I think he's different than Blake in this way. He'll probably be looking at the season the same way because he's going to be getting the last big contract of his career, and I'm sure it galls him that he's never even made the conference finals at this point. He's one of the best point guards of all time. There are a lot of reasons why that has happened. You know, last year, basically their whole team got hurt in the playoffs, and they still wouldn't have gotten by the Warriors, but they got in this tough spot. And if they, let's say they lose in the second round or something like that, I don't know that if I were him, I could say, even if they're offering, you know, crazy max money, all that kind of thing, to say, well, that's going to be my legacy, because the Clippers do not have the flexibility to add talent. Even if Blake left, if Chris Paul stayed, they wouldn't be able to add anybody. Like, that's just the way their cap works. So they're under a huge microscope. And the other part, you mentioned this before, but Doc being the coach and the team president really lowers the chance that they blow it up, because you don't really see that from those types of coaches, because they want to coach good players. You know, they don't want to blow it up. And Doc is at the point of his career where if the team, like if the Clippers decided they wanted to rebuild, he'd probably just leave. So why would he basically cancel out his own job? And as long as he believes those guys still have something left, and they do, he can interpret his own obligation as being something where he needs to make the team as competitive as possible, and that requires keeping both of them unless somebody makes a crazy offer. And the most logical one that was ever theoretically on the table would have been Kyrie for Chris Paul, and at this point, I don't think Cleveland can do it, considering what just happened.
Yeah, I don't think Cleveland can do that, and I think your assessment of Doc as a GM is completely right. You look at the moves that he's made in the past, he's always trying to add veteran band-aids to sort of bolster his team in the here and now. He hasn't really been focused on player development. He hasn't brought in young talent and tried to integrate it. So there's nothing that he's done as GM that suggests to me that he'd be making sort of a strategic play to build for 2 or 3 years from now. I think he's just going to ride the talent he has as far as he can take it. But right now, that doesn't look to be far enough.
Yeah, but I think they could do really well this year. I mean, I don't think they're necessarily the favorites to make the conference finals to be the other team, but if you were to tell me that they finished second in the conference and then had a great series against whoever was the 3 seed in the second round, wouldn't surprise me at all. And I guess part of the reason why I'm not as focused on them as a threat to the Warriors as some of the other teams is that their ceiling is really high, but it's not the type of thing that the Warriors struggle with. I mean, there were times last year where they, you know, the Clippers blew that 10-point lead at Oracle when they went to the death lineup and just knocked them out of the park. But teams like Utah and Minnesota, which are lower floors and arguably lower ceilings, just have the right guys. They have versatile players that can give Golden State trouble.
Yeah, Paul doesn't give the Warriors that much trouble anymore. Curry is able to get past him now on offense without much difficulty. The Warriors' defensive sets are able to contain him. You then have to deal with Blake, who occasionally gets it going. But Draymond, Andre, other players are good at bringing help to slow him down. They can reduce Jordan into a total non-factor. Lob City's not an issue. So the Warriors have solved the Clippers right now, at least, other than the Spates explosion in the preseason, which I don't think will be a regular season occurrence.
The other huge change is that the Clippers don't have anybody to handle Durant. And he fundamentally changes it, because when the Warriors are playing Iguodala and Barnes, you can get away with not having that forward defender, that, you know, the Kawhi or Kawhi equivalent. But when Durant's on the floor, if you put an inferior player on him, he will blow them apart. And if they use Mbah Mute in that role, then you have a guy you don't have to defend on defense. And as much as I love Luke, went to college with him, like him personally, he isn't that guy. And they can't get that two-way small forward because they don't have any assets anymore.
Yeah, there was a great quote as part of the GM survey that got released today, where some team executive said that the opponents used to not scout for Barnes, and now the Barnes role is being played by Durant. And that really kind of drives it home. You know, you could sleep on Barnes, and maybe he got hot and hurt you, maybe he didn't. You can't sleep on Durant, and you actively need to come up with a really elite defensive player that not many teams have.
And there's been a lot of speculation, and it is idle at this point because we haven't seen it at full strength, but who will benefit from that sort of change? And the answer could just be everyone. As terrifying as that is.
I'm going with Clay. It's going to be Clay getting more shots. He already called it from the beginning of the season.
He did, and Clay getting more shots makes sense because of the way this team might move the offense, especially early on, because you see there are two general pathways in terms of models that you could look at for the Warriors. One is the Miami team, which is the most obvious, but Boston is another one that works, and Boston figured it out a little bit earlier, and part of the reason they did was because they weren't as dominant as individuals. Like, their play personality was different. You know, like they didn't have alphas in the same way. Like some people, there's a term, I think Sean Hyken created it, called the three alphas for the Bulls, because they all have these guys who their teams take on their character. And it didn't really come to a head in Boston because, first of all, none of them were point guards. And second of all, that was just wasn't really what they were. Allen and Garnett fit into their niches. And considering the rest of the Warriors team has already kind of established it, that sort of a pattern in terms of how this team meshes appears more likely than Miami, where they had to spend so much time figuring each other out.
Yeah, all the players in the Warriors core know their roles pretty well, which I think gives them an advantage in terms of melding their skills together into this new super beast of a team. And the reason why, getting back to Clay, why I think Clay is really going to benefit from the added piece of Durant and the offensive threat is his role is to be the shooter, even more than Curry. When Clay gets the ball, he's always looking to get his shot off. And he's going to touch the ball more frequently in situations where it's incredibly easy for him to get his shot off. So maybe he dials it back a bit just not to destroy the flow of the offense and keep other people involved. But there are going to be so many good shots for Clay this season, thanks to Durant's presence with Curry and the others on the floor, that he's just going to have a green light like no one's seen in a long time.
Yeah. Made this reference on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, that the other aspect of Clay's game that is so well suited to that is he has such a quick trigger. Not only in terms of his actual release, but in terms of if he feels he's open and gets the ball in his hands, he's just going to shoot. He will not overpass. That is not something we ever have to think about or concern ourselves with Clay. If that ever happens, I'm going to fall out of my chair on press row. Because it's yeah. That can be considered a criticism, and in some ways it is. But in other ways it's not, because when you are as good at what he does as he is, it's kind of good to have that lack of a conscience. Like, if you imagine if J.R. Smith, who has plenty of gifts as a player, was as good a shooter as Clay, it would be awesome. You know, like that would be a way to do it. And we've had a lot of these great shooters who are team players, Korver, J.J. Redick, and all that. And having somebody who's an absolute gunner, but is actually one of the best shooters in the league, can really work.
Yeah, we saw it a little bit in the Lakers game this weekend, the first quarter, when if Clay's feeling it, the team's just going to keep feeding him and he's going to keep getting great looks and there's not going to be anything he can do about it. He's going to have 18, 20 points in a quarter, I would think, fairly regularly when he gets hot. Because you have two players now in Curry and Durant who really have a gravity to them. And we talked about Curry's gravity a lot last year and the way he draws defenders. Durant has that same presence where if he has the ball or he's near you, you're instinctively shading towards him. He's drawing your attention. And Clay's release is so quick that all it takes is a defender turning his head to look at Durant for a split second, and Clay's got his shot off. He's the perfect player to exploit those sort of gravity shifts that those two other players are going to create offensively on the floor.
And the Warriors should try to dance around the idea of moving him strong side and weak side a little bit just to keep defenses off balance. I mean, the most obvious way is to have him on the far side and just hope that the guy comes over to help. But every once in a while, changing that up, and also the Warriors have done such a great job at moments, and they should do it more, of having Clay and Steph screen for each other, because teams get discombobulated. And one of the huge differences this year that I don't think people are necessarily grasping is the amount of creativity you can use in order to force switches, because Durant is one of the best post-up players in the league, and if you can force switches involving his guy, you can create mismatches all over the floor, and assuming that Steph is healthier than he was in the finals, he can attack those as well. Clay could be a big beneficiary of that, because if Durant gets a one on him in the post, somebody's going to have to help. And if Durant's read is that he has to pass before he can shoot, that ball's going to find Clay a large portion of the time.
Yeah, Durant's one of maybe three or four players in the league who can simultaneously bring the ball up and run the offense for you, dish it off, go into the post, receive the ball in the post, and still run the offense from the post and be a credible threat. When you have someone who can do that, you know, LeBron comes to mind. You know, I don't know who else would potentially qualify. It's so incredibly difficult to adjust your defense because you never know where they're going to pick their spot to be a threat. So Kerr could have dedicated all of training camp probably just to the new offensive sets that he can run with the ball in Durant's hands. And it's going to be really fun, I think, from our perspective, people who watch the team night in, night out, to watch those sort of strategic shifts pop up throughout the season as the team learns how to use Durant and Kerr really implements the Warriors' motion game, the passing game, the switching, all of that to take advantage of his skills.
In the death lineup, Klay Thompson is the Warriors' worst dribbler and passer. That's how good that lineup is. All five guys can grab and go. Each guy can kind of occupy whatever space they need to within that in transition after that. And the flexibility that's there, and that actually, that's one question. But then the other one, it popped into my head while we were talking, is how quickly are we going to see, even if it's a couple minutes, of McCaw with the death lineup, and how much will Warriors Twitter explode when it happens?
It'll be the highlight of the first month of the season, I think, when McCaw gets a death lineup run. And if the Warriors go off on a 16-4 run or something, it will be almost as good as winning a championship for Warriors Twitter.
Yeah, the amount of things that Kerr can mess with and try if they want to, because when you have those four guys together, they should try almost every single other player in it. They did some Livingston included Draymond at center lineups last year. They worked reasonably well. The spacing, you kind of defeat some of the purposes of it, but that also ties in with something that's going to be super fun with this team. I worked on a piece. Actually, it was a podcast. It's becoming a piece tomorrow, probably, about Durant as a scorer. And Durant is unquestionably the best post-up guy on this team. And when they go to those kind of lineups, they can do four out around a bunch of different guys. They can do four out around Durant. They could do four out around Livingston and run kind of a constellation type thing, which teams just don't really know how to handle. Because it's not like you're going to put your center on Sean Livingston if he posts up. You're still going to have a guard on him.
Yeah, we're going to see so many uncontested layups that come from those types of sets because defenses are just going to freeze. They're just going to give up. They're not going to know how to handle all of the players that are being run at them. And someone's just going to backdoor and get an easy drop-off pass and get a layup. It's going to be really fun to see the different looks that they're able to throw out there.
And for that reason, among many others, this team, even if they don't play a ton of close games, they'll have a fair share. The Warriors always have some really fun games like that, like the ones against the Celtics last year. But they will be a league pass team in the first halves of games a lot. Because if you are a basketball nerd, if you are somebody who likes seeing how this sport can work, they can test out things that we never really thought we would be able to. I mean, this is the first time that we've ever seen two former MVPs play with each other in their 20s. And both of those guys, you could argue, are either pre-peak or at their peak. I mean, that's not in terms of necessarily stats. I mean, I don't think Curry's ever going to top last year statistically, but just in terms of their game being at the best that it can be, there's a chance that happens this year or next year.
Yeah, there are teams that are really good teams. There are teams that are championship teams. And then there are teams that change the way that everyone plays basketball. And I think that this really does have the chance to be a team that changes the way that the NBA plays. It already has to some extent, I think. But watching this gifted collection try to dissect the three-point line, spacing, movement, switching on defense, all of these tools that are now the staples of the modern NBA, it's really going to be a test case for how far that style can be pushed. So you think about the Showtime Lakers, you think about the Bad Boy Pistons, you think about the Jordan Bulls, they all had a definable style that really was the peak of an era. And I think we may be getting ready to see that type of team again.
We could. And with the interest that is in the league now, there is a group of fans that maybe, I'm sure they experienced it with the Miami team, which was very different for a lot of different ways. And there was a great video, I'm not sure if you saw it, about it was a compilation of some crazy stuff Peak LeBron did, which is another thing that we've already lost sight of a little bit just with how quickly the league moves. But this could be the galvanizing team for a group of young people in particular to really see it and influence it, not only for people our age thinking about the sport, but kids that are 7, 8, 9 years old and that saying, that's the way I want to play.
Yeah, I think we're already seeing it. You had Mark Jackson last year talking about how Curry was a bad influence on kids on the playground. You know, it's changing not just the game in the NBA, but the game, the way it's played on courts across America.
Yeah, it definitely is something. Is there anything else you think in terms of season expectations, season thoughts that you think you want to get out there to listeners before this whole thing really starts?
Let's just get it underway. I feel like I was ready for the season to start on July 6th or whatever the day was after Durant's move. So let's get it going. I'm just so excited to see what this team looks like when it's pushed, when it's challenged, when it can rise to the occasion.
One small proposal along these lines is they can keep the preseason this long in terms of duration, but there should be fewer games. If they want to practice this long, not a problem, but playing seven games is just too much.
Yeah, I know why the league wants to do it and why the owners like it, of course. They make a lot of money off of it, and
True.
It allows them to go into markets where they don't exist. But we have had injury issues every preseason, and the players don't need it to tune up. They can do that in scrimmages. They can do that, and they already do it at the beginning of the season. So I think it's really just diluting the quality of the beginning of the year to have it this long.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Adam for taking the time to come on. You can read him at the Fast Break blog, which is the San Jose Mercury News' fan blog. And you can also follow him on Twitter at GSW Fast Break. GSWFASTBREAK. Really enjoyed talking with him. We get into some big picture stuff, but then also get into the granular small picture. And it's fun because we flow off each other a lot. And those are some of my favorite things, because the idea with those episodes of Locked On Warriors is really for it to be a conversation. And Adam is a great conversationalist, so it fits in really well. And it's great to have a sponsor. I'm super happy about Athletes Collective. It is a product that I use and enjoy quite a bit. And so you can go to athletescollective.com. And then you can use the promo code Warriors, which not only lets them know that you came from us, but also gives you 15% off your first order. So it is one of those circumstances, which is actually great in podcast advertising, when it really is a win-win, because you get to try out a great new product and you let them know that it came from us. And then they get to kind of understand where their advertising dollars are going. And it is a product that I personally endorse because I believe in it. And so I was so thrilled that we were able to make it happen. If you have any feedback on the show or any other show, you can reach out to me personally. Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. And you can also reach, if you want to, you can go to DannyLaRueMBA@gmail.com. That's more for long form things. And if it's a question that you want answered on the show, I will be doing stuff with mailbags and everything like that. And I'm really wrestling with how to deal with the combination of things, but anything that gets in there that I think warrants answering on the show will get answered in some way, shape, or form. So maybe sometimes those will be not in mailbags, but just something in a solo episode or a talking point with a guest or something like that. So if there's a question that you want to know the answer to, odds are there are other Warriors fans that do, and I'm filling enough content on this show that those ideas are welcome. And I won't promise that I'll tackle it immediately or anything like that, but it definitely can be. And that's a fun part of this process, is that it really is collaborative. And sometimes, because I can get deep into the weeds, I can miss something that you think is worth it. And also, you should follow the show, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, Locked On Dubs on Twitter. And then if you want to email the show personally, you can do that, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com. Really try to make it work for you, whatever you're comfortable with. And it's been a lot of fun so far to engage in that way. But at the same point, and Adam and I talked about this at the end of the podcast, I'm ready for the season to start. It's a week away, but all of these questions and idle banter and everything like that, it's just time for it to be over. And the season is going to be fun enough and answering a lot of questions and interesting the whole way through that might as well start, even though it will be very busy for me personally. But that is a very small concern in the grand scope of things, and I consider myself incredibly lucky to be able to do this. So the rest of the week is going to be really fun. There's a very real possibility that the next few Locked On Warriors will all be recorded tomorrow. I will continue the Real GM Radio tradition of not announcing guests ahead of time, because I don't want people to get disappointed in case something falls through, because that's always disappointing. But trying to record three podcasts tomorrow, all three are people that have never been on Locked On Warriors before. So if that happens, it'll be two that are more preseason, not time sensitive, and then doing a game recap of Lakers-Warriors tomorrow night. So that is where they're going to go. They're going to get spread out. And another thing, I ask this sometimes in Twitter polls, but I'm going to ask it here too, which is the Warriors also have a game on Friday against the Blazers, and that got me thinking about how I want to tackle this, because at first you might think, oh, well, if a show goes Monday to Friday, you can do that. But a Friday game means it's really a Saturday episode. And so there are a couple different ways to tackle it, but really the choice is not having an episode on that Friday and then having an episode on the Saturday instead, or waiting to talk about that until Sunday for an episode that will come out Monday. So if you have a strong opinion on that, you can reach out to me. That's probably best as an email thing. So DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, so that I can take your opinion into account, because on Twitter, that sort of thing gets lost in the shuffle very easily. So if you have a strong opinion on that, let me know, because the listener opinions are incredibly important. That is such a big part of what makes this show a success, is doing what you all want. I was going to say you guys, but we do have female listeners too. And I'm happy that we have a diversity in this, and it's fun with Audio Boom. I actually get a little bit of information on some of that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's a little bit of a diversion, but your input is very important. So if you have a strong preference between no Friday episode and getting it out quickly, or waiting to talk about it till later, but in complete honesty, some of that will also be my own personal availability. You know, if it's a Friday night game at Oracle, I get home and I want to go to sleep, then I might not put out an episode then. But certain times might be jazzed up, might have the right guest, or really want to get into it. And in those cases, I'll probably jump on it. So your input is important on this and anything else. And another thing, since I'm talking about input, some people have asked about a theme song. It probably will get one at some point, but I just want to find the right thing. And I'm not the biggest fan of podcast theme songs, as much as I love the one for Real Jam Radio, which was composed by my friend Jared Trace. It isn't the most important thing in the world to me, both on my own podcast and the ones that I listen to. So I like getting right into it. So if I even add anything, it'll probably be more of the 5 to 10 second variety. So we'll see. If you have anything that you think would be a good fit, you can reach out to me through the same avenues as before. I've had a couple people do that. I really need to listen through the submissions. But realistically, it's not going to be anything that has any sort of rights fees, because at this point, at least, I'm not making enough on the show to send it to anybody else. And even then, you don't want to build in that sort of a thing at this point, especially on a show that runs as frequently as this, because even a small number adds up when you do 5 or 6 episodes a week. So thank you so much to everybody for listening, your support in every way, shape, and form that you are doing it. You can continue that by subscribing, downloading every episode, and then with whatever podcast player you use, leaving a rating, leaving a review. Those are all incredibly important. And checking out athletescollective.com using the promo code Warriors is another great way to do that. So if you want to, great quality stuff. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.